All right. Welcome to the Alt Animation Podcast, the podcast that talks about the saltier side of the animation industry. My name is Josh Ryan.
My name is Robert Orndorff.
And we got a really good show for you guys today.
A really good show.
We have Mike Rausch, who is an awesome animator for Titmouse. He's worked on everyone's favorite shows, including Super Jail, Venture Brothers, Metalocalypse. Many others. We're going to listen to that interview a little bit later. But one thing that Mike kind of covers in, you know, his interview is he got to go to Annecy, the film festival. And so I figured we'd take a little time to talk about the different film festivals there are for animation specifically. You all right with that, Robert?
Yes.
Well, the thing is that, you know, for an actual animation festival here in America, you have SIGGRAPH. Mm-hmm. Which is not only dedicated to animation, but it's still really cool. You have, what, the Red Stick?
Red Stick, yeah, down in Louisiana.
But there really isn't, like, a big animation-only film festival. I mean, South by Southwest, all of the, you know, Sundance.
We say that because we're in Austin, I mean.
Well, they have animation sections, mm-hmm. but it's not dedicated only to animation, where the panels are only about animation, so.
Right.
And, you know, mentioning if you are in Austin, if you go to the Austin Film Festival this year, they have a very animation-heavy film panel, and mainly for writing. So if you guys are interested in writing for animation, I mean, they're going to have... Well, John Lasseter will be there for a luncheon, but he won't be doing a panel, but they have directors from DreamWorks and, you know, Sony Image... the Sony Animation Department. So there's a lot of...
South by...
This is the Austin Film Festival.
Oh, okay.
And it's very affordable, and it's going to be awesome. So I'm going to try to make it out there.
What do you know about Fantastic Fest and animation at Fantastic Fest?
You know, I looked
any,
it up
any
last
word
year.
On that this year?
I looked it up last year, and I didn't see any animation. And then I saw later on that it had some that was really good. So I'm going
to
try and make it out this year. But I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure what it's going to be. But yeah.
Either way, no American mecca of animation.
No, so I mean, you kind of have to go elsewhere to see some really cool, you know, animation festivals dedicated only to that particular.
Like what, Josh?
Like Annecy. It is a film festival in France that is like the creme de la creme. I used a French word there or phrase. So yeah, check out their website. It's annecy.org. And again, guys, go to our Facebook page. If you want to see any of our show notes, you can mm-hmm. click on the links there. That'll take you to the websites that we talk about, and you don't actually have to search, because everyone knows that typing in searches and stuff on Google, it just takes too much time.
Or if you're super lazy and you're listening right now and you're not on our Facebook page, it's annecy.org.
And you guys should probably already know about this, but if you don't, check it out. The next one I want to talk about is the Ottawa International Animation Festival, and this one I'm going to get to go to this year.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
So I'm going to take my recorder, and I'm going to try and interview as many people as possible. We'll see what happens. I'm going to try to do like a daily, you know.
Going to be a man about Ottawa?
Yeah, I'm going to put on my reporter's hat and try to see what I can...
Just put a little kind of, press card in it, and everyone will know, you know.
See what kind of scoop I can dig up.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. The next one I want to talk about is a really cool animation festival. It's called the CROC, International Animated Film Festival. If you guys haven't heard about this, check it out. Basically, and I'm going to read the Wikipedia here, word for word, it's an annual international animation film festival. It's held in Russia on even years and Ukraine on odd years. The festival takes place, and here's the kicker, over the course of 12 days between September and October on a cruise ship. So you get on a cruise ship where they're... according to the stories, massive amounts of alcohol. Mm. And you watch animations all day, and you talk to other animators, and you're all stuck on a boat. And it's apparently the funnest thing in the entire world. Everybody that I've ever heard that went just loves it, absolutely loves it. And I bought a DVD, actually, called CROC I Drink, which is a animated film by Ira Verbitsky. Now, originally I thought it was a documentary about the festival. I didn't read the Amazon description very closely.
Yeah.
So when I
like
got
you.
It, yeah, it was a 2-minute animated film. So I watched it 3 or 4 times thinking, you know, oh, this must be the pre-roll of the DVD.
This must
be the menu.
This is the menu.
Yeah, and then after the third time I realized, okay, well, you know, it's awesome, and I highly recommend you guys get it if you want to support another film.
Is it like a, it was like totally hand, like, done on just someone's computer. They just totally printed out a bunch of
the packaging copies. Looks pretty good. It's even got a barcode and everything. So, and I ordered it off of Amazon. So, okay. I mean, I highly recommend you guys get it.
Oh, wow. And on the back, the data only goes like a quarter of the
It says it on there. It says the runtime length and what it is. I just, I guess I read it and saw something different. But it gives you
You were blinded by the possibilities of...
Yeah. I was so excited about, an animated documentary, full-length animated documentary.
What's the name of that, I guess it's sort of infamous Russian animation of, aliens and blue giant people and...
Oh, no, you're thinking of Fantastic Planet.
Am I? Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. No, that was actually, I'm pretty sure, a French film.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, the aliens are huge and the people have... The people have the mind control devices on them.
Maybe.
Well, anyways, if you guys haven't seen that movie is awesome. Yeah. I don't even know when it came out. It definitely came out in the '70s, and it's good movie.
I thought, sixties or seventies, and it's scary. Don't be drunk or anything while you're trying to watch it.
It's definitely a mind changing film for sure. Oh man, it gives you that kind of creepy feeling afterwards, but in a good way.
I think I was looking behind my shoulder. It was.
Yeah.
I just felt I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. So if you guys get a chance to go to any of these festivals, especially the Croc International Animation Festival, please send us an email. Or if you got to go to in the past, send us an email at altanimation@gmail.com, or you can write us on Facebook. But we would really like to hear stories, especially about Ottawa, for me, because I would like to know, where the cool places are and what the cool things to do there. And maybe if anyone's going this year, I will know somebody there.
Yeah.
If not, that's cool. I'll just stick to reporting.
Any events that you you're going to or anything?
Oh, I'm going to try to go to everything. I mean, I'm not even going to
leave. That's impossible, but...
Well...
Anything you're looking forward to, I guess I'm asking.
I mean, definitely the panels. I think that's going to be the coolest part for sure. And, all the meetups and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to interview a bunch of people. I think that's going to be the funnest part for me.
Okay.
So. Yeah, all right. So definitely check those festivals out. If you've been to the Croc International Animation Festival, tell us about it. Tell us how awesome it was. We would love to hear about it. So moving on from festivals, we're going to talk about some... interesting animation stories that I've come across. One of them is a really cool humanoid USB posing mannequin. So, all right, those wooden posing dolls that you can buy at any craft
store? Yeah, you see it in every sort of cliche art studio.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the wooden mannequin that's about 10 feet or 10 inches high and on a stick, and you just pose them however.
This is the same kind of concept, but it is actually a rigged electronic mannequin that you can move around, and it has sensors on it that hook up to your computer that are, they look at certain points in your rig, and you can move the mannequin around like a stop-motion armature, and it moves your 3D.
I was wondering why we didn't have this, 5 years ago.
I'm sure it's extremely expensive to produce these things, and make sure that they work properly. I suppose you're right.
It seemed so logical, and yet at the same time, 5 years ago, I guess I probably wanted one. And was mad that they didn't exist. And now, knowing what I know, probably wouldn't want one.
Well, I mean, I can imagine how it, it's fun, but I don't think it would make the process any faster, per se. I mean, it might be faster for, say, a director to come up and, maybe if the director has one, he can just plug it into your computer, or the animation supervisor, plug it into your computer and say, hit this pose. I want to see something like this.
It's gonna end up looking like stop motion animation,
Well, not necessarily. I mean, unless you do it frame by frame, you slightly move it yourself.
Okay, you're right.
Yeah, otherwise the computer's still going to interpolate certain points.
I don't know. I'd like to see the software for this. I mean, we're just looking at the actual mannequin itself.
Yeah, there's a video, and you can see how it works.
I feel like this is probably the iMovie of animation.
I would say it's more like the Wii of animation.
Okay, all right. Well, what I mean, though, is that I don't know who they're marketing this to. I sort of just recently became aware of this, but, I see the sort of... rich suburban high school kids who want to be filmmakers. This is entry level stuff. I want to be an animator. Oh, look, I don't, you know, all
well, it'd
I
be
need
a great
is
way
this.
To teach kids, you know, the concepts of things. Because, yeah, it's really hard to, you know, explain, okay, you're moving keyframes and setting poses, mm-hmm. and, you know, you have a rig, and you got to grab these certain controllers. It isn't very intuitive, and it's not, you know, no. It doesn't have a great...
Large learning curve.
Yeah, exactly, user interface. So...
But you get that lower level, I think, of overall quality... At the expense of quality, but the gain of allowing a whole another group of people into the market or into the world of animation.
I mean, it's just a tool, just like anything else. I mean, I can see huge possibilities of making this like a great transition from a 2D animator who's going to go to 3D, and he's an awesome 2D, you know, Disney animator, but he doesn't have a project to work on.
And what you're essentially saying is. You're talking about somebody who understands the concepts of animation, the universal concepts of animation.
Yeah.
I'm saying that this is probably going to be picked up and used by people who don't know that stuff.
Well, I mean, the price would have to come down, I would imagine, because they're just not...
Name the price. What's
Well, I don't think they're even selling it yet. It's just, you know, it's a...
That's how expensive it is.
Yeah, it's just a prototype.
We built one, and it took the entire GDP of Japan to make it.
Oh, man, they make the coolest stuff there. I'm sure that they have no lack of robots or sensors. Or they just grow on trees there.
Well, and this isn't the only one we were talking about.
Yeah, this is something that I've been thinking about for a while now, and I think this is kind of how stuff is moving. Because, okay.
What is this?
Well, this is using the Kinect for motion capture, you know, with a rig. The Kinect is already set up to read your body motions. It can,
the Kinect
for the Xbox.
Yeah.
So it can, you know, determine where you are in space, in 3D space. It can separate your hands from your body. It's not just a silhouette. It is an actual depth sensor, which is, you know, what a lot of tracking software was missing for, you know, 2D tracking, traditional, without, you know, without a motion capture suit with cameras everywhere.
What was the one that came on with the, or not... that you could buy for the PlayStation 2. I feel like there was
the PlayStation 3 has the PS3 Move that has
No. There was
the PSI or something. Yeah.
It was just not very good.
Well, I mean, for the time it was awesome because it did real-time facial tracking and, you know, you could put like a funny hat on your head or something. You know, that's cool stuff, you know, like you can play around with things.
It was gimmicky, though.
Well, absolutely, but, you know, that's how a lot of stuff starts off. Photography.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah,
you're
photography right. Started off as a gimmick, and now look at it.
But I think this has moved beyond gimmick.
Oh, yeah, I mean, a lot of people are doing some really cool stuff with it. The scary part is that it might become, you know, something that might possibly take away animation jobs in some way or another, because pretty much anybody can stand in front of a camera, and if you can move your body, like, you know, somebody who's a gymnast... is now a better animator than me because I can't actually get my body to move that way if the only tool is the Kinect, you know?
What about the... Okay, so first of all, you know, I haven't gotten to play with the Kinect a whole lot. Facial expressions, what is there, you know...
Oh, well...
Right now, it's not that sophisticated, is it?
No, absolutely not, but you look at games like L.A. Noire that are doing it almost perfect. I mean, in 1 or 2 or 3 years, it's going to be standard for all games.
Well, I don't know, I mean, what about the Uncanny Valley, you know? I mean, all of these Zemeckis
films...
Have
you played L.A. Noire?
No, I haven't.
That was the problem with the Zemeckis films, is that what they did originally was... They looked at, okay, so they took the motion capture data, they put it on the body, but all the face and stuff, like in Polar Express, that was done by someone after the fact.
Okay.
So
really?
What they were told was, they're like, look at the performance, as opposed to, hey, animator, like, here's your job to shine, do something cool. That's why they look so dead. Well, in Tintin and some of the other ones that are coming out that are new, they have somebody going in and actually pushing things.
Plussing,
you know?
It.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So that's going to go away, because...
You think the Uncanny Valley is going to go away?
I think they're doing it. They're doing it the right way now, as opposed to let's move towards making it exactly like a human.
Right.
Let's make it what animation should be, which is caricature. And a lot of times, caricature is sometimes more real than the actual person. You know, like you can really encompass a character with caricature better than actual live action. You know, getting it from that actor.
Production on Avatar. What was that?
Oh, man, a lot of it was motion capture, but people went in and made it better. Yeah, you really have to understand And that's one of the things we talked about last time, that What is Animation video. You guys should check that out if you haven't seen it. They talk about this exact same thing. They're saying, yeah, I mean, the fact that you think it's motion captured most of the time just shows how good the animators are, and you really can't give them more than that because...
But bringing it back to the, you know, you saying that the days of the Uncanny Valley are numbered or gone... Here with the Kinect. I mean, there's going to be a whole bunch of people who probably don't even know what the word the phrase Uncanny Valley means, and I guess I'm just saying that this is yet again just sort of like home movie technology, I suppose.
Well, but but you got to think of it in relative terms, because if everyday common Joe can do this much with technology, what can guys like Steven Spielberg, who are on the cutting edge of technology like 20, 30 years ago, what are they doing now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a huge...
I think they're doing what they were doing before, cheaper, and that's all.
We'll see 10-10 and we'll see what it looks like, because I don't know.
Yeah, but they didn't use a Kinect to make 10-10.
No, I'm saying the technology is moving. So the normal, you know, a normal person wouldn't have been able to do any type of animation like this themselves. You know, my mom or dad or my little cousins would have never been able to record their motions,
mm-hmm.
whereas I can, because I go in and I study it and I do it on a computer and I know where to move the keys to. Well, now it's sliding down to where, okay, so I can do something even better. You don't agree?
No, I don't, because the consumer is still going to respond to... they have a level of expectation, and sure, you can.
So you don't see how,
just because you increase the supply of animation, i.e., you know, make it cheaper to make, doesn't mean that it's all the same. It's not a homogenous thing, and some animation is going to be, you know, way better than others, and you know, people don't respond well to bad animation, so. I think that whatever is produced by, you know, this Kinect technology or anything similar is only valuable to the person who made it, I think, or their family or people around them.
People can respond really well to bad animation. Think about Pac-Man. It's not, you know, it's not anything special. It's just,
You mean the game?
The game, yeah.
That's a game. They're not responding to the animation.
This is for a game.
Okay, so are you talking about a person making their own video game?
What I'm saying is, do you see like what I'm talking about, the sliding scale of technology? So You have on the cusp where everybody can be, it's just like with digital cameras, okay? You started off, once people started doing digital mm-hmm. cameras, everyone all of a sudden became an amateur photographer or a digital photographer. You know, there's tons of photo blog websites up for people that normally wouldn't have been able to do that.
Okay.
Because it actually, you know, it makes it more accessible is all I'm saying.
It is more accessible,
and then pushes the bar up higher.
You don't see a glut of Hollywood directors just because iMovie was invented.
No, but you definitely see, you know, more indie films popping up, especially nowadays than there used to be. It's a lot more accessible with Final Cut and digital cameras. Yeah, dude, there's definitely a lot more going on there that wouldn't have been there before.
Are we talking about the latest version of Final Cut? Well, this isn't an editing podcast.
Yeah,
but...
well. Check it out.
My point is that there's the added potential supply of animation due to these kinds of technologies. Realistically, can sort of be chopped off and thrown away anyway, because there's no demand for low quality, poor performance wise.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I'm kidding you.
There's tons of demand for that. Man, I watched, I hope no one I know worked on it, but Big Buck Hunter, I saw the arcade in the place yesterday. The animation is so bad.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
The average person like think about games back in, back in Nintendo 64 times. I mean, animation at that point for games, you can see a huge difference in the quality. I mean, people talk about this. It's definitely something that a lot of people agree.
I can tell now. I think this whole time, perhaps you've been talking about video game animation, and I've been talking about...
I'm talking about animation in general.
Okay.
Think about, motion capture and performance capture. Mm-hmm. You're talking about, Beowulf, Polar Express.
Yeah.
Then, from that point, you go to Monster House, which is way better.
Mm-hmm.
You have all of these other tools. You know, we have... people like DreamWorks that are using motion capture as a reference. Or, okay, at DreamWorks, they always record reference of their face. Mm-hmm. What's to stop them from having a Kinect record a reference of their motions, as opposed to them, you know, just doing a video reference? Now you have a 3D reference that you can automatically put on the rig. So say it's for a Madagascar character, mm-hmm. right? You can move around like the lion or the giraffe. It automatically saves that animation to a rig, so you already have your first pass done. Or you mm-hmm. can do multiple different takes, show that to a director. I mean, that's animation. It's not necessarily the best, but it's useful animation.
I mean, okay, so, but that it doesn't improve the quality. Perhaps it improves the production time and the overall production cost, right? It can definitely improve the quality.
What if they hit something that they wouldn't have been able, you know, that they liked, that wouldn't have played otherwise? You know, it's useful information. It's, whenever you're doing an animation like this, you're saving that motion. That's basically what animation is. You're recording a motion. Mm-hmm. And as, you know, we have so much technology and ability to save all this data now, why not, you know, use it and analyze it and get tons of data to work from, you know? Like, what's to stop people from recording their own... Okay, so what's to stop everyone from owning a Kinect to record a walk cycle of themselves, save all of those walk cycles, and do a relative, like, average? This is what the average male, 18 to 35, what this is his walk, a female, you know... 18 to 35, this is how they walk. This is the average for you to reference. It's just important information, or not necessarily important, but it's useful.
Okay.
And, you know, it's definitely changing. I would think it's going to change how things work, because you already have places like Mixamo that have, you know, animation reference or animation templates, mm-hmm. and you can drag sliders. You know, you can say more sleepy or more tired more sleepy, more drunk.
Yeah, you know, with presets and everything.
Exactly, and it's a stepping stone. Now, a lot of people, yes, they'll stop there, mm-hmm. and it's going to look horrible. But you can use it, is all I'm saying.
Good point. Excellent point.
All right, well, let's move on to the interview now, because we definitely talked about that for a while. So this is Mike Rausch. He works at Titmouse, mm-hmm. Worked on tons of really cool projects. Some of my
Burning
favorite.
Owl.
Yes, one of them. You'll hear what that means later. But, you know, just all of my favorite stuff. It's crazy because, you know, I feel like I can... I didn't want to say this when I was interviewing him because I didn't want to freak him out. But, like, I'm a huge fan of his. Like, I think
he's going to listen awesome. To this.
Well, yeah, for sure. But I didn't want to freak him out at the time.
Oh.
And
now he can be freaked out all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all the stuff that he's done, like, I feel, you know, like, it's some of my favorite stuff. And
why?
I feel like I can pick it out. Just because it's amazing. Like, his stuff is really cool, you know? And, like, the Titmouse does some really cool stuff.
Is there a nuance that you see and you go, that's Mike Rausch? Or...
Well, I definitely picked out, you know... So how I got to know him, it's a really cool story because you guys can do the same thing with people that you think is awesome. But I saw a shot on the new season of Super Jail that mm-hmm. just blew me away and I thought was super cool. So I just found somebody that worked on Titmouse online and was like, hey, do you know who did this? And they passed me to somebody who actually hadn't animated that shot, and they passed me to somebody else. And by the end, I had gotten to talk to like three people that work at Titmouse.
That's cool.
And I ended up finding Mike, who made this short film that was by far my favorite one that I saw at
Spike and Mike. Yeah.
Was
that this past year's or was... I can't... Because I remember year, seeing yeah. it, but I don't... Okay.
And... I guess we're getting ahead of ourselves. He made a really cool short film called The Hidden Life of the Burrowing Owl.
Yes.
You'll hear about that in the interview. Just tons of stuff, like mm-hmm. the Guitar Hero intros that I think are so cool. You know, the short film number, you know, also the, you know...
The repertoire of shows, you know.
Yeah, and I watched Black Panther, which he worked on, and I was like, oh, that's super cool. And then I saw his name at the end.
Is he part of the Black Dynamite?
Yes, he worked okay. on the new Black Dynamite. He did worked on the pilot. So, he's just an awesome guy, a super talented dude, really cool. You know, you can tell he loves his job, and he's just a real fun guy to talk to. So, listen to the interview, and we will come back, and we'll talk to you guys after that.
Yes.
All right.
Well, I am here with Mike Rausch. That's how you pronounce it, right?
Yep.
Okay, and you're with Burning Owl. Is that correct?
What's that?
You're with Burning Owl.
Actually, it's actually pronounced The Hidden Life of the Burrowing Owl?
I was just kidding. I watched that video. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the story behind that? Did they just not know what the film was called, or?
Yeah, you know, like you go to an international film festival, and you'd imagine they'd know what you're doing, especially when they decide to interview you.
Well, for the people listening, there's a video of Mike online at the AFI Fest, right? That's what it was?
Yeah.
And they said that you're from Burning Owl, which, you know, isn't a bad name for a company, I guess, but that's not the name of your project.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
I figured that'd be a funny way to...
next time, and they'll get it wrong, and they'll call it the other one.
Well, all right, let's start the actual interview with my bad jokes aside. How would you classify yourself? Would you say that you're a 2D traditional? Do you classify yourself as any particular kind of animator at all?
Yeah, let me think of a really awesome thing. I'll call myself a digital traditional cutting edge animator.
I like that. Well, I guess my first question would be how you got started. You know, what's your origin story? When did you get started? When did you fall in love with animation?
Let me think. Probably like most people, it happened when I was a real little kid, just watching Disney feature films and, you know, anime, like any anime that I could get, VHSs in Blockbuster when we used to have to rent VHS cassettes. Just as a little kid, I'd watch those and I really, really loved them. And it wasn't until like about fifth grade that I, you know, they used to have those Disney stores in the mall.
Yeah.
You know, I went into one of those and I picked up this this book. It was How They Made Beauty and the Beast. And I looked at it and they had all these pictures of people in that book. And under the captions of all those people, they said, oh, this guy went to CalArts. And he now animates for a living. And that was the first time I realized, oh, someone does that for a job. And I looked at, when you're fifth grade, you're like thinking about, like, oh, what do I want to be, a fireman or whatever? And I was like, I want to be that. I love that stuff, and I love to draw and everything. And I think I decided way back then.
So what did you do traditional art at that time, or was it just doodling on paper, or?
Yeah, you know, I was a little kid, so, you know, I'd do anything, you know, any kind of, like, class assignments, or I had a little sketchbook at home that I drew in and stuff. Nothing that you could look back and say, well, you could totally tell this guy wants to be an animator. Like, it was just, you know, I was having fun. I was, you know, and I never stopped.
Well, where are you from originally?
Well, I was born in East Moline, Illinois.
And but not a whole lot of animation industry up there, right?
Not a whole lot of animation. it's the home of John Deere. So there wasn't much animation there, but I moved out to California around junior high. And I was in the Bay Area. And I was there, and I eventually made my way down to Los Angeles for college. And that was me specifically looking for art colleges to go to.
Okay, so you already you definitely were sure what you wanted to do before going to school.
Yeah. College. I mean, you know, when you graduate from college, you tell your parents, hey, I want to be an animator. What can I go to animation school? And, you know, they smile and go, that would be great. But how about you get a degree? You know, they're trying to parlay it. Well, if you like to draw, maybe you could be an architect, you know, that kind of thing. But
so where did you
be an animator? I was just going to prove it to them. So,
well, I think you've probably done that, right?
Hopefully. If you don't mind calling my parents right after this interview.
Yeah. We'll give them a call and ask them what they think. all right. So where did you go to school?
So, yeah, I started off not getting into CalArts. I applied and they kind of denied. They said I just didn't have enough life drawing and, you know, I wasn't developed enough. So I basically decided to go to art school, the cheapest one I could find that had an animation program, to basically work on my portfolio so I could reapply. And that was Cal State Fullerton down in Orange County.
Okay.
And I got there, and after a year, I was already animating and doing a whole bunch of stuff that I wouldn't even had a chance to do at CalArts yet. And my parents were really glad because I was getting, you know, a degree, you know, a BFA also. So they were thrilled with that. And, you know, I was finding really, really good friends and really good teachers. So I just stayed and hoofed it the Cal State way.
Now, what year was this?
Let's see. I went to college in 1997. And oh, wow. I graduated 5 years later in 2002.
So I can imagine that that'd be a time where CalArts, you know, was extremely packed with people wanting to get in at that point in time.
They were. Actually, I have a couple friends at Titmouse, the studio I work in right now, who actually tried to get in those couple years and didn't get in. And now we're, you know, heading up the studio, which is kind of funny.
Which, you know, I think that is so cool because a lot of people think that going to CalArts is a must, you know, to actually do something fun and creative in the industry, but really it isn't, you know?
Yeah, you know, that's what I thought. And I'm not saying CalArts isn't a great school. It totally is. So if you can get there, go there. It'd be great. But, you know, to learn animation, it takes more, I don't know, guts than actually someone, like, handing it to you, you know? Like,
yeah.
I went to Cal State Fullerton where we had all the tools, everything at our disposal. We were like down in Southern California, so we actually had, you know, close proximity to a lot of like studios and animators too. But, you know, we didn't have like the world renown of CalArts, but, you know, put your nose to the grindstone and work really hard, you know.
Well,
that's the most important thing is just to keep drawing, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of what this podcast is about, you know. It's about the people. Everyone has their own kind of like journey to wherever they're at with animation.
Sure.
And, you know, it seems like a lot of the people that go to CalArts, you know, they kind of have the same story of, you know, everything working out and you know, being awesome and, you know, learning everything they need to learn. But we're really interested in the stories of, you know, people that kind of take an alternative route to it, which, you know, I feel like you've definitely done successfully.
Yeah. And, you know, animation is, you know, it's not rocket science. I mean, it is tricky, and, you know, I don't want to weaken the point that you need to, like, you know, get out there and talk, find other people who like animation. But, you know, my main education was I found, like, six other guys who I just surrounded myself with, and we loved animation more than anything, you know? And we basically lived in the dorm together, and we just, like, 24/7... just lived, breathed, slept animation. And
that's so cool.
That's basically what CalArts gives you too, is they just put you in an environment with other people who don't go, oh, you like animation, that's great, but let's go do something fun, you know? Like, on the weekends, we would go up to the Los Angeles Zoo. This is on the weekends, mind you, like, when everybody else is partying.
Yeah.
And we'd be like, hey, what do you want to do this weekend? And we're kind of like thinking about what parties are around and stuff, and one of us says, well, I was thinking about maybe, you know, going to the zoo and drawing some giraffes, you know? And then the other three of us are like, oh, yeah, let's do that. And, you know, we have a blast.
So how important would you say finding like-minded people was to your success?
I would say it's probably 99.999%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, finding people, networking, all that stuff, they tell you, they have a million hints to do that. But, you know, the passion is more important than anything. And if you can find how to balance or mix, actually, your passion with the social passions of your friends, that's killer. Like, then you become an animator immediately. You don't have to wait to graduate. You know, you are an animator.
That's so cool, man. Okay, so is that the Those Guys blog you guys have? Is that the same group of people?
Yeah. A lot of those guys were... A lot of those guys were in a lot of my classes, so yeah, that's like the main core of my pals at Fullerton.
And what's that website again for the people who want to check it out? Because that's still up, right? I mean, I went to it the other
day. It's still up. It is ancient and decrepit. I think that goes into the graveyard of past blogs that people have done and stopped. So,
yeah.
I mean, I you know, to tell you, I'm not even sure what it is. I think it's like thoseguys.com, but,
well, it's,
you know,
that's
years and years old. I wouldn't go to it.
Well, I'll send them on a scavenger hunt. If you can find it, check it out.
Nice.
People listening. Well, all right, let's tell people what you've done. I mean, you worked at Titmouse. You've worked on shows like Metalocalypse, Super Jail, and Black Panther. Any other big name ones that you want to mention that I missed?
Yeah, just a couple months ago, I finished off a little stint on the Venture Brothers.
Awesome.
Kind of making my way around Adult Swim, I guess. you know, Titmouse, we do a ton of stuff, which, you know, we're not a giant studio, but we do a little bit of everything, which I find is, like, right up my personality. We did a lot of those interstitials in the Guitar Hero games.
Yeah, which are awesome, man. I love those.
Oh, cool.
So well done. Yeah, I bought the game just for those, actually. Not gonna lie. Yeah. Okay, so there are two major studios, right? There's one in California and one in New York, right?
Right. We just opened the one in New York just because we're kind of overflowing with work right now, which we're totally happy for.
Yeah. That's a great problem to have.
Yeah, it's really good. And we actually just opened up our third building in Los Angeles, so it's crazy to think, like, actually, I don't know if you know this, but I was one of the first employees at Titmouse.
I did not know that. That's so cool, man.
Yeah, about 7 years ago, I actually found the job listing on Craigslist.
Really?
Yeah. And I basically graduated. And maybe I'll go off on another tangent a little bit. I basically graduated like a lot of animation majors do and went to some of the main studios and said, give me a job. And they're like, it's a downtime. We don't have a lot of stuff. So, no thanks. So I basically just, I was like, okay, I need a job. I need to prove to my parents that, you know, going to art school was a good idea. And about 6 months later, after, you know, doing every other job you can imagine, I just was randomly on Craigslist, like, desperately looking for jobs. And there's a listing for Titmouse, a studio I'd never heard about. And they said, hey, we're looking kind of for animators who know some 2D. It's like it paid like dirt cheap. And it was kind of like a animator slash intern position.
Uh-huh.
Which after getting the job, I realized it was 50-50. I would be animating half the time and installing toilets and sweeping floors and taking DVDs around Los Angeles the other 50%.
Oh, wow.
But it was awesome. Like, you know, any chance to actually get paid to do it, I was thrilled. And now we're well over 250 people.
Now, what were they working on at the time when you came on?
Oh, geez. What were we working on? You know, we did the Nickelodeon show Avatar. We did the intro.
Really?
Yeah, we did that, like, the, you know, the little intro where, you know, it flies through and shows you all the different kind of, like, powers that the kids have.
Yeah, man, that's one of the coolest parts of the show. I'm kind of geeking out right now. That's awesome. I did not know that. Yeah,
so we did that, and I think we did, like, a Honda commercial, and we did a couple. The Disney Channel had this thing called Shorty McShort Shorts at the time.
Yeah.
And we did one of those shorts.
Which one?
We did the one called Dudley and Nestor, I think Save the World or something.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that one. I'll have to look it up, though.
It's the best one.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll definitely have to look it up.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. That's basically, if you find that one, you'll find me using Flash for the very first time.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely interested in seeing that.
What's that?
I said I'm definitely interested in checking that out then, see, like, how you progressed with the software over time.
Yeah, that's definitely a progression. Like, back then, I didn't know anything of what I was doing. They basically came to my desk and said, hey, Mike, do you know Flash? And I said, no. And they said, well, today you're going to learn.
Oh, wow. And what version of Flash was that?
Oh, Jesus, it was like 5 or 4 or something.
Oh, wow.
Like that sounds a lot, but that was, like, before the CSs. So that was, you know, it went from, like, 5, 4, 8, 7, to then the CSs. So that was lots of versions ago.
Well, let's talk about that. How was the transition from, you know, traditional, you know, drawn-on-paper animation to an actual digital format?
You know, it wasn't super fast, but it wasn't super slow either. I realized, because basically we had a studio, and, like, at the time we were, like, starting up a Flash project. So we were kind of like, you know, I was an intern, so they said, hey, we're going to kind of start teaching you Flash, and we're also going to bring in all these Flash animators. And what happened was, I realized is a lot of the Flash animators weren't as good as I was immediately because I knew how to draw and I knew how to animate. I didn't know the program, but it's something that you can learn really, really quickly. Like, the program isn't the hard part. The hard part is, you know, animating.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I wasn't amazing right off the bat, but what I found is, you know, there's that stigma of, oh, you're a Flash animator.
Yeah.
You know?
And I was about to ask, how was that transition? You know, a lot of people kind of looked down on it and, you know, fundamentally were against it. What was your thought process on that?
Yeah, I think people still do, but, you know, I love it because, you know, I think the stigma comes from people not using Flash really well. Like, if you use Flash and, you know, I'll say it this way, like, I basically started using Flash not knowing how to use it at all, so I just started using it as, like, a digital paper and pencil. And over the years, I slowly learned you can't do that, you can do this. And that actually helped me right off the bat because I was doing stuff that people didn't know you could do in Flash, or people had the rules already set. You can't do that in Flash.
Well,
but I just did it, and they're like, how'd you do that? And I was like, well, I don't know how to use this program, so I don't know the rules for it, you know?
Well, let me stop you there, because I'd really want to get into the technical aspects of kind of how your work process goes, but I'm going to do that in a little bit. I kind of just want to talk to you. Okay, so you're, first off, a TV, you know, you work on a TV show, multiple TV shows, and you work in America, which is already a job that's, you know, about as rare as an ice cream tester, I would say.
Right.
And the fact that you get
that's
to work
a good
on. Yeah, exactly. And the fact that you get to work on Adult Swim shows, I mean, that'd be my dream, you know, and I'm sure that's a lot of people's, you know, that would be their ultimate goal. You know, you're basically living the life. You know, how is that? I mean, do you feel satisfied with your work? I mean, are you wanting to move on, or are you cool
with
where you're at?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always seeing what's on the horizon, right? Like, I always want to see, like, where we can take this and what new kind of projects we can do. You know, I think that's always a good attribute for people to have, artists to have, you know? Like, you know, by the end of any show, like, by the season, I am tired of it, you know, of course, because you've just done, like, how many thousands of hours of, you know, drawing a certain kind of thing a certain way. But, yeah, it is, I won't lie, it's awesome. It's totally awesome. Yeah,
that's
basically
what I wanted to hear.
Yeah, it is thoroughly good.
Yeah, you would crush my dreams if you said it was horrible.
No, you know, you'll find people who say that kind of stuff, like, you know, it's so hard, you know, coming into work every day and drawing all day and then going home and making a paycheck. And you're like, sorry, I don't want to listen to that. No, it's totally awesome. Like today, we're working on another, I forgot to mention this one. We're working on a brand new Disney XD show, which I'm totally pumped for. It's like an age group, like maybe 10 to 14 year old boys, kind of like a Generator Rex kind of thing.
Very cool.
And I just animated robot dogs attacking race cars all day long today.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, like, that's pretty cool, right? Like, you know, other people come home and say, what'd you do? Oh, well, this guy, you know, he couldn't find a mortgage on his house, so we had to, like, really work with him to find the equity. Like, you know, I'm sorry, like, I animated robot dogs today. That's awesome.
That is pretty cool. Wait, can you talk about the show? I mean, what's it called? Are you allowed to say anything about it?
Yeah, I can say a little bit. I can't say a whole bunch. I can't tell you any plot lines or anything because it's still...
Yeah, certainly.
We're only on, like, episode 2 right now, but they did kind of release it at Comic-Con, so I can't talk about it. It's basically an animated Dukes of Hazzard in the future with robots. It basically, if you took Dukes of Hazzard and mixed it with The Matrix. And that's basically the pitch for it.
That sounds amazing, man. And what's the name of it?
Oh, it's called Motor City.
I will definitely have to check that out. I'm going to keep an eye out for it.
It is killer because it's also being 100% animated traditionally in the United States.
Oh, wow.
So we're using Flash, but we're not – it's the opposite of what you'd imagine a Flash show being, that very paper cutout stuff. This is very three-dimensional, very anime, very, you know, red line, like, extreme kind of stuff. It's I'm having a ball on this one.
And a lot of the stuff that you guys spend a lot of time on, I mean, I'll show it to people and ask them what they think it is, and they can't tell that it's Flash. I mean, you guys really spend a lot of time, you know, making it, you know, making it look traditional.
Oh, thanks. Like, that's one of my life missions, I think, at Titmouse. I think that's a lot of our missions at Titmouse is, you know, most of the time clients come in and they have that Flash bias, right?
Yeah.
And they come in and say, oh, we have this idea for a show, but I don't know if we really want to do it at your guys' place because you guys do Flash and we don't want it to look flashy. But we specialize in making Flash not look like Flash, making Flash just look like badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, this past, we did like a special episode of, it's Adventure Brothers. I think it's going to come online pretty soon. And we did it all in Flash.
Wow. I mean, yeah. That's my favorite show. And they transferred to Flash the second season, right?
No, they have yet to transfer to Flash.
Really? I thought that they transferred. Okay.
Like, basically we did a big test to decide if, because basically, like, the show is starting to, like, decide if they want to start, like, updating it and, like, seeing if they can use Flash to kind of cheapen it. I mean, cheapen the cost, but make the quality better.
Certainly, yeah.
Because a lot of, I mean, I think they're still animating it in Asia. And, you know, one of the downsides of animating in Asia is there's a big gap between handing out the animation and getting it back. So, like, the directing is really hard to do where, you know, Titmouse, you know, the director can walk up to your desk and say, I want that dog to run faster, or I want him to be more on model. You know, the you can do crits right there.
That is so cool.
And you don't have to wait for it to be sent over the Pacific Ocean.
Absolutely. I can imagine there being a lot of benefits to, you know, having everything in-house like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the hallmarks of Titmouse, too, is we do everything in-house. Or I shouldn't say everything. We do most things in-house. And, yeah, we can make sure the quality goes up because of it.
And so you're doing a couple shots for Venture Brothers, you say, right? Did you get to do a shot of Brock? Just had to ask.
I did. I got to do a shot of Brock cleaning a bloody knife off.
So cool, man. Yeah, I'm definitely geeking out right now. That is awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about Super Jail, because that's how I came to know who you are. Well, I mean, I had seen your short film, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but I really didn't, you know, I didn't know who you were. And I saw a shot that you did of Super Jail for the new season that's out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just so awesome that I had to try to find out who did it, and it ended up being you. And I really wanted to ask you is, okay, so Super Jail, Augenblick did the first season, right? Mm-hmm. How was that? I mean, because that already has a huge following. Was there a lot of pressure for you guys to try to compete or make anything similar or not similar to what it was before?
There was. Like, right off the bat, you know, Augenblick did a super rad job on the first season, and they decided to go over, I think, to do Ugly Americans this season.
Yeah.
So we got a chance to do it, and you know, basically everyone who started on it was super big fans, and that was also the beginning of New York Titmouse.
Okay.
That's when we just opened. And we're kind of, that was kind of like a perfect storm of friendly competition, because we just hired a whole bunch of animators to supplement our LA animators in Los Angeles. And we split the episode down the center, and some of us took half the episode, and some of them took half the episode. So we were doing, like, our dailies over, like, kind of Skype. So we got to, like, animate, and then, like, twice a week we'd sit down and see what they did, and they'd see what we did. And, you know, they are really good animators out there, and we'd basically sit there and go, oh, they're making us look bad, you know? We just immediately go, like, run back to our desks and just try to, like, outdo them the next time. And that, you know, that shot that you mentioned that I did was basically, like, a total response to a shot that I had seen that a guy named Mike Carlo did in New York. And he did this beautiful, beautiful shot. And I was like, oh, hey, I can't be the guy who's, like, I want to do something that people, I think he did it and everyone clapped because it was, like, so
cool. Oh, man.
So I was like, okay, that's going to be me the next day. So I sat down and I just I just opened up the elbow grease pot and just put it all on the board. And yeah, I had a really good time doing that shot. And it was a sweet shot. It was like a guy, I think, waking up from anesthesia, and they had just, like, he had been chopped up, and he was just waking up in the hospital. And they sewed a whole bunch of body parts back on him, but all the body parts were mismatched, so none of them fit. So, like, his leg was twice as long as his other leg. So he was, like, the super hodgepodge Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And, you know, they hand that shot out to me, and that was just, like, you know, the best shot to get for an animator, because it's like the sky's the limit on what cool stuff you could do.
Absolutely, man. And just, I don't know, I might be looking into it a little too much, but, I mean, just the fact that, like, you know, like you said, one of his legs was twice as long as the other one, so he kicks off the sheets, which is just an awesome animation, and then you see, it was like a reveal of that other leg, you know, and it worked perfect, but it was so funny the way you did it.
Nice. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, like,
oh, I sweated over that one for a while, so that's good to hear.
Well, yeah, man, and I think it sounds like the people who are in charge of Titmouse are really doing, they're really making all the right decisions. You know, you hear a bunch of horror stories all the time, but it seems to me like they're, you know, you guys have some really interesting dynamics and cool ideas floating around there.
Oh, yeah. It's actually, Titmouse is owned by a husband and wife team, Chris and Shannon Pranowski. And they're the best. Chris, who owns the company, is an animator artist, so...
Oh, wow.
You know, when you sit down to him for a meeting, and you're like, you know what? I know it's not on the budget, but I would really like this guy to do a 360 and then punch this guy's face in half. And then he looks at you and goes, you know what? We don't have the money, but I think we should do it, so let's do it, you know? Like, he's about the art. He really does want it to look super badass. So he'll check the artists.
That's such a different story than most places that I've heard of.
You know? Yeah, we have our problems. I mean, sometimes, you know, like at the end of the week, he'll come to your desk and go, you know, Mike, I'm sorry. Can you please work on Saturday? And I'll be like, I'll do it. You know, I understand, like, we need to, like, get this going and something. You know, we're not, like, impenetrable to problems, but, you know, it's we have a solid foundation of awesome there.
So is there any fear that as you guys, you know, get bigger and, you know, you guys get more projects and more people involved that you might somehow lose that connectedness or that edge, I guess?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I think that's kind of like where we're at right now at Titmouse is we're constantly having that discussion of like, you know, how are we going to try to keep this place cool, you know? Because we all know that like when the studio gets bigger, you know, it just becomes a lot more lumbering and a lot less agile. You know, you just can't, like, turn on a dime if you have, like, 200 people that you need to communicate something to. But I think we're doing a pretty good job. I mean, we're trying to keep, like, you know, teams small. And so they're, you know, each team, like a team of animators that I'm a part of has, you know, like, we're kind of, like, self-sufficient and we try to, like, make sure that we're doing the coolest stuff. And, you know, we have an amazing background crew at Titmouse. And, you know, they try to keep their crew really like a family, you know, like where they all know what each other's doing, you know. But, yeah, it's a thing we're constantly worrying about and trying to protect.
So those small teams, like you were saying earlier, I'm sure that fosters some great, like, friendly competition.
It does. And I think that's an important thing is to, you know, like, it's an animation studio, so, you know, trying to keep the motivations and the reward system happening, you know, we, like, for a while there, I think we went down the wrong path for a while. We kind of started doing less and less dailies, which is basically a meeting where everyone comes together and puts their stuff in front of the director, and the director, you know, points out problems and like, oh, we got to redo this, or the hookup is wrong for this, or whatever, or, oh, that looks awesome. Let's all pat you on the back, you know? Mm-hmm. And us being artists, you know, we don't want to dwell on it, but we like to show off, you know? And when we started doing less dailies, we had less opportunity to show off in front of our peers. And we found that people started slowing down a little bit. Not because they were angry or anything, but just because, you know, that motivation of like, ooh, I can't wait to show this them. Like, you know, I can't wait to show this, you know? Or,
yeah.
Oh, this is going to be great when I, like, put this into dailies and everyone's like, oh my gosh, that's rad! You know, like it took down that friendly competition, which is one of the main motivators, I think.
Well, yeah, so, most people didn't go into it for money. You know, they went into it because they love it.
Right, right. Or, you know, it like if you do go into it for money, the first like however many years you were an animator, you realize the money is not there. So, you know, like, you know, you go into it, you know, for the money. You want to make a living. You're trying to make that your job. But there is also another pie piece that's just as big as going for just to do it. Like, you like to do it, so you want to do it. You know, you do it even if someone wasn't paying you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can definitely see how that would be a boon to a company. Not a boon, a benefit to a company, you know, that's really looking to make stuff on the cheap, per se, or cheaper, but still have the incentives there for the workers, absolutely.
Right.
So, all right, for shows like Metalocalypse and Black Panther, you know, I would imagine that you guys are expected to kind of tone things down in a certain way for certain shots to save money and save time. Mm-hmm. Is there any type of, oh, I want to do more here, and they just won't let you?
There is. I mean, it's always a give and take. You know, like, you know, we'd love to have a feature budget, but we don't. You know, we'd love to spend like 3 weeks on a shot, but that's just not in the cards. But it doesn't mean it can't be awesome, you know? So we basically, and I think this feeds right into my personality that feed like really likes this kind of stuff is, you know, the director will come and he'll have a paper plate, some string, and a whole bunch of pencils and go, okay, we got to make something with this stuff that is going to blow people's minds, you know? He doesn't come to you with, like, you know, like a NASA-grade rocket and laser guns and plasma and, like, a bag full of ghosts and say, blow people's minds with this. That's easy. You just show people that, you know? But, like, you know, giving somebody some, like, hardly any material and still having to impress, it's a super fun challenge, you know? And then you find all these different ways of doing it, and really, like, I feel like a lot of times we're, like, really doing kind of innovative stuff. So, I mean, as someone who works there, it's super rewarding.
Well, one of the shows that, you know, hasn't really got a lot of attention, I guess, is the Black Panther series that you guys did.
Yeah.
Which is out on Netflix now, which is where I saw it.
Yeah, I think everyone should check that out. That when we were doing it, you know, that was super shoestring budget, but it came out so good. Like, I'm so impressed with how it turned out.
Oh, yeah, okay, well, so it came out at Netflix the same time as a bunch of the motion comics, and I wouldn't even categorize Black Panther as a motion comic, which I think it does on Netflix.
Yeah, I think, and that's actually how the guy came to pitch it to us, because I guess at that point in time, like, motion comics were real kind of exciting, and, you know, they brought us a budget for a motion comic, and, you know, Tim House is known for doing stuff, you know, doing more for your money. Like, you really get bang out of your buck at Titmouse. So, you know, we sat down with it, and I actually worked on the pilot, or kind of helped with another animator, Dave Vandervoort, who we kind of, like, came up with the style of the show, where we literally took comic book pages and cut them up, but then really added a lot of our own animation to it, too, to, like, really make it feel good. But I think some of our inspiration was, and I might be showing my age, but back in the 90s, MTV did this series called The Max.
Oh, I love that show.
Yeah, it's super awesome, right?
Yeah.
But that show is all about, like, basically kind of like, you know, fully cooly economy, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you're going to have a shot where you need Juggernaut to, you know, run at a rhinoceros and tackle him, you know, you take a whole day for that shot. But then when you have shots where there's a whole bunch of people talking around a computer, don't do anything. Like, the audience is cool with that, you know? Spend your money where people want to see it, you know?
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, you know, that same paper plate stuff. Like, you know, there's no rules. Like, there's no rules like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. You know, bring any and all tricks to the table. Or whatever can get it to look cool is the right one, you know?
Absolutely. Now that you mention it, thinking of the Juggernaut running that shot and, you know, an animation of the Max running, they're pretty similar in terms of style and in animation style as well. That's awesome that you mentioned that. Now, I can see it now that...
We're definitely inspired by the Max. The Max was, like, that was really cool. I mean, I watched that when I was, in high school or junior high or something, and that blew me away.
We have an animator at my studio that he has some the Max action figures, and they're pretty cool. They actually have real hair and everything.
Oh, yeah? Cool.
It's pretty awesome. All right. Let's move on. Okay, so talking about the cool stuff that you guys get to do at Titmouse and, you know, the interesting challenges that they bring out, you have a bunch of really cool videos on your Vimeo page of your 5-second – or, sorry, what was it? Is it 5-second challenges?
Yeah, I can talk about that a little bit. That's actually through Titmouse 2. Okay. It's kind of like just little personal projects. It's just kind of stuff like, you know, you're working professionally and you're doing, you're working on, Hank Venture, or you're working on, Squiscar Squig Elf or whatever. And
yeah.
At the end of the day, you do not want to animate another, hair, guitar, headbanging cycle ever again. But you still want to do something. You still are anxious to do some of your personal stuff. So Titmouse kind of gives us a lot of, 1 year a day. Well, I mean, 1 day a year. We basically have, a field trip day where Chris and Shannon, tell us a week before, and they say, oh, next Friday is going to be 5-second day. And basically what it is you come in and you have the whole entire day and you have to make a film. And it can't be anything to do with what we're working on professionally for any clients or anything. But it's just whatever you want to do, however you want to do it, we're just going to have a blast. It's going to be kind of old college type stuff. And we're all just going to do it. And then the next week after we edit it and put it together, we're all going to have a party and watch it. And some of the most creative, coolest stuff, innovative stuff too, happens that day. And Chris and Shannon, the heads of the company, have really found that, if we take one day and just take the financial hit for that day, it actually benefits us quite a bit because, that background artist who really wanted to just animate something, or the animator who wanted to try this After Effects thing that he was really thinking about for the entire year but didn't have access, tried it out and find new and beneficial ways to actually improve our other projects. And it's the coolest thing. And then we kind of let it out into the internet and show people, and it's just fun. It's just cool.
Oh yeah, well, I highly recommend people listening to this to go on the Vimeo page and search for Mike. There's some really good stuff, man. I really enjoy your the dancing machines and is there a reason why you kind of go with machines? I mean, there's only two of them that you have on there, but they're really cool and really well thought out. It reminds me of a Dr. Seuss contraption.
Oh, cool, thanks. Yeah, that originated from, I had a friend in college who was part of those guys. His name is Justin Ridge, and he's actually working at Titmouse now too. But back in college, we'd be talking in the animation class and we'd be like, what's awesome? Fantasia. Fantasia is awesome. Why don't they do Fantasia, right? That's been done. What if they just use modern music? Because animating to music is the coolest thing in the world, right? It's everybody likes watching cool, fun, non-plot driven animation, just doing cool stuff to really cool music. So basically that's what we started doing. We started doing little challenges where he'd write a little 15 to 30 second little blurb of music on his Acid program. And then we'd go, okay, on your mark, get set, go. And then in a week, we'd show each other what we had done to that same piece, but not show each other. So, and it was always something radically different. And it's just, those stupid little things that you do just because you like to animate. But it was just that. And he actually did the music to this last one I did that was based on a music box. And it was a music box that opens up and kind of the world's coolest music box you'd ever want to see.
Yeah,
and that's on my Vimeo page too if you want to check it out.
Yeah, that, oh man, I love that one. Although when you think it stops, there's another little gadget that comes out, and it gets really cool towards the end. It's watching them all work together. It's an awesome animation. You can really tell you guys had fun, or you had fun making that.
Cool, thanks. Yeah, and you know, what's interesting is that one literally lent itself to the Disney show we're working on now, which I was like kind of trying out a technique in Flash that was really kind of like a 3D kind of replicating kind of process. I mean, it didn't work super well for the short I did, but you know, it was the research and development time I needed to like really kind of work it out. And now we're doing a whole bunch of that stuff in the show we're working on.
Well, man, there's definitely parts of that where I was going to ask you if it was 3D. It looks, you know, dead on.
Nope, just a whole bunch of Flash.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I hurt myself that week.
Oh, really? All right, let's see here. Okay, well, talking about the cool things you get to do at Titmouse and the stuff they encourage you to do, you got to direct a short film through them, correct?
Well, basically, I think it was back in 2001, Chris and Shannon came up to me and they're trying to find ways of kind of expanding their name and getting their name out there to get more projects. And they're kind of looking into magazine or television ads or, you know, in industry books, and they found out it was super expensive. So what they decided to do is, instead of like just advertising a magazine saying like, hey, Titmouse, have your animation done here, is to actually make shorts and then kind of send it out on the internet, just kind of as calling cards of what we do. Because you can't really like do a show and then kind of throw it out on the internet and show people, because it's owned by somebody else. So we kind of wanted to do that. So what they did is they just chose two random people in the studio at the time who had pitched them some stories that they liked. And I pitched them the story of, you know, a fake documentary, animal documentary, where it all goes wrong. And they really liked it. So I started working in my off hours and after work. And about a year later, I finished it. And we kind of sent them out into film festivals and kind of started getting our word out there. And it was really successful. And we've been having a really good time doing it. We're on our second batch right now of four that we're doing. I was really surprised. Annecy, International Film Festival, actually asked to show The Hidden Life of the Burning Isle 2. So I was able to go out there for that. And that was one of the most amazing experiences of my life, is to actually be able to show my short in front of a theater of like literally 1,000 people from all over the world. And it is the best thing I would suggest for any animator or animation lover, is if you find yourself in France during Annecy, go there and you'll see some of the coolest stuff you'd ever want to see. Like, I was thoroughly intimidated by everyone there. Everyone just was super awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and not only do you have 1,000 people in the theater, but it's 1,000 of the, you know, the biggest names in animation and you know, animation buffs in the world.
Yeah, I got to meet a whole bunch of them too, and it was, I just nerded out the entire weekend. It was great. And what was really nice about it too is after showing at Annecy, it was a real good springboard to take my short to a lot of other festivals. And I think to date it's been at more than, let me see, I have it on the wall here, more than 43 festivals.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's been a whirlwind. And I I think it was 2 years ago, I got it into the Spike and Mike New Generation Film Festival that's been going around. So that's,
yeah, I got to see it there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good collection of shorts too. I really,
oh, yeah,
I feel honored being part of that. Wow. There's some really good films in there.
So who are some people that you got to glad hand with down at Annecy? Did you get to shake hands with any big name people?
Yeah, I got to meet Plimpton.
Oh, wow. Know,
and I got to meet Richard Williams, which they're showcasing.
Oh, that must have been awesome.
At the time, which was really cool. And I only talked to him for a couple seconds because I was like on my way out, but I got to meet Doug Sweetland, who at the time was the director of Presto, the Pixar short.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I got to rub elbows with him for a couple seconds, which is really cool.
That is so cool, man.
Really nice guy.
So yeah, you're basically living the dream.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah. Like, it was It was a really cool short amount of time to be the princess of the ball for a while.
Okay, so the Hidden Life of Burrowing Owl, there's a lot of traditional, you know, really well done, awesome animation. The style is so cool, and the way you integrate the backgrounds with the animation and the way you weave the story. I mean, I don't want to give it away for people who haven't seen it, but you know, the way that the story progresses is just awesome. But as far as the technical, the technical parts of the animation, you have a lot of traditional animation in there, but also, I looked at your making of, and you have a lot of non-traditional techniques, you know, like having each of the feathers a different symbol and things like that. You want to talk about that process at all? I mean, how do you blend traditional and non-traditional together in a way that feels appealing?
I mean, I think that's just kind of like going along with that whole like titmouse way of working is, I could have done a traditional and gotten a traditional feel, but, I kind of was into at the time, like, and I think still am, trying to get a look that it's kind of like you don't really are totally sure what you're seeing, like it looks cool and there's something about it, but you're mixing, techniques a lot, almost sometimes just to mix them just so you kind of fool the audience. I think at the time I was, you talk with a friend, like you go to a movie and then you talk about, that movie was awesome except for that one shot. It just, like, I totally could tell how they did it and all that stuff, I was just really into that kind of Peter Jackson way of going about it where you use so many different, like, old style techniques with brand new techniques with kind of techniques that aren't even techniques, they're just kind of like tricks, and blending, like putting them all on the same palette, like with this digital technology we have now is, you don't have to be an ILM, you don't have to have $1 million to do that. You can do that on the simplest computer, a Dell computer, and, when you mix it together, the audience is always off balance. If you like do a whole short and you use one way of using your CG, you have to do it. You have to blow people's minds with how good it is. But if you mix up techniques, like, if you use a little bit of CG with some drawn elements, like I know at the time there's a short called Octopody.
Yeah.
I think it was done at the French Gobelin School. They were mixing like two-dimensional like bubbles with like CG animation. And you look at it and you automatically are drawn to it. Because you see a CG something, you know how that's done, but then there's like this flat stuff on it, and you're like, wait, like, you don't immediately know how it was done,
yes.
So like the magic is preserved, which I think you just have to keep innovating and keep doing newer stuff to like, because the audience to any kind of movie right now is so sophisticated that they get bored with stuff that, if you took it back in time just a couple years, would blow people's minds,
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a lot with, and especially with short films, you do see a lot of people nowadays, blending stop motion, hand-drawn, flash, traditional. You see people mixing all this kind of stuff together to make something cool.
Yeah.
Overall, looking at the animation industry, feature-length animation, how do you see, what's your thought on things? I mean, do you look at things as a whole like that? Do you see where things are going?
Well, I definitely think that is a frontier that is going to be kind of like the obvious merging. I know there's this studio Boulder Animation in Ireland who's coming out with a show, I think it's going to be on Cartoon Network, called Gumball. And it's... I was able to hang out with some of the Boulder people a couple months ago, and they showed me a whole bunch of like pre-like shots, and it is going to be amazing. It's basically every animation style you can conceive of, but each animation style is a different character in the show, and they're all at the same high school. So there's like a flash animated like cat hanging out with a totally 3D T-Rex, and then they're like next to puppets and stop motion kind of things, but they all like integrate, and it is totally cool. It like it it's so fun to watch. It's totally cool. So I think that's definitely where stuff is going, at least in TV right now. And I don't see that ever stopping. I think, you know, mixing of techniques is just a solid idea, you know, always. But yeah, and you know, I'm a story guy too, where, you know, I don't think it's ever going to go out of fashion, where, you know, the good movies are going to be the ones with good stories, you know.
Absolutely, so, yeah.
You know, you can and it's a bummer, like, because I've worked on stuff where I feel like our animation staff at Titmouse did a really good job, but then the story wasn't super good and it totally fell flat. But then we did, you know, really good animation and the story was good and everyone loves it. You know, it's the story is really, you know, the main thing. You know, it's just the animation is just how the story is delivered, you know.
Absolutely. You sold me on that one show, the Irish show. That sounds awesome. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, I think you can Google it. I think they've shown clips of it on YouTube already, so.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Google Gumball Cartoon Network TV show, and you'll definitely see a trailer.
Very cool. Okay, so other than that, I mean, you kind of touched on a little bit, but, you know, who are your current inspirations right now? Who do you look to? You know, what are shows that you like or movies that you've seen or even people online that you get inspired by? If you can name one.
Yeah. I'm always, you know, I don't – this is my – I'll give you two answers. The real answer, which is I get inspired by someone new like almost every day.
Yeah.
But then if you want names – I know I've been really heavily looking into a lot of Robert Valley things lately, just because Robert Valley was one of the concept designers for the show that we're working on right now at Titmouse. So we've been really like trying to get inspired by his kind of like his method of doing things. His stuff is amazing, just off the hook. He did the intro to the Beatles Guitar Hero.
Oh, wow.
Thing. Yeah, I mean, search Robert Valley on YouTube and be entertained for like 3 hours.
Oh, yeah. If you guys haven't seen the people listening, if you guys haven't seen the Beatles rock band opening, that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Oh,
it's so good.
Yeah, it's super, super good.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal guy. And we've also, just for the show, we've also been like, really looking at a lot of Jamie Hewitt stuff, the Gorillaz guy.
Yeah.
His stuff, I mean, his design is just off the hook. It's, like, really good. Yeah, those two guys, like, literally in the last week I've been looking at. But I'm constantly being, you know, inspired by, and I hate to say this, but guys that I can't even remember their names because, you know, I'll be on, like, Cartoon Brew or something, and they'll come out with a whole bunch of new Go Blonde shorts.
Yeah.
And I'll just fly to the moon and back and just watch those things a million times and wish that YouTube would finally do a frame-by-frame feature.
Absolutely.
I don't know why they don't yet. but, yeah, and, you know, I can't say that I even remember all of their names, but, you know, there's so many cool shorts coming out. Like everybody is amazing. And, a guy that I was looking at, again, like, I've loved his work for so long, the New York artist Pez.
Yeah.
He did the short called Western Spaghetti that I cannot watch enough times, which totally inspires me for, like, you know, I normally watch stuff not to just appreciate, but I get really jealous, and then I want to do it just like them. And I watched this Western Spaghetti short, and it's a short of just, you know, a cook's eye view of making a plate of spaghetti, but the hitch is it's stop motion and they don't use any food at all. So they use like rubber bands and dice and velvet and like, you know, like pickup sticks and all these weird things. But I don't know how he did it, but you watch it and you can't get enough and you have to watch it again. And it's stuff like that. I just don't know how, like, what about it, what it is about it. Like, I like to pride myself on watching something and picking it apart and kind of, like, analyzing it. You would analyze a poem in English class.
Uh-huh.
You take every line and you realize the double meanings of all the words and, you pick apart all the etymology and, like, you know, the onomatopoeic, like, aspects of it. And, you know, I like to do that with shorts. I like to, actually, this is one of the things I used to do in college that I would recommend for anybody who wants to do shorts, is I'd find a short that I liked, whether, like, a cool Pixar short or a short I was able to find on, you know, Spike and Mike DVD or something, and I literally shot by shot it, where I'd pause it on every frame and draw a thumbnail of every single shot of the whole thing. So basically reverse storyboard it. Oh. So I'd watch it and then just pick it apart and make my own storyboard for it, because I kind of like wanted to see what the storyboards look like for that, but, you know, a lot of times they didn't have it. So what I'd do is I'd reverse it and storyboard it, and I'd find all these things that I didn't see after watching it 100 times.
That's a great tip, you know, and one I really haven't heard before. So yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to try that.
Yeah, I mean, one that I would totally suggest you do is Pixar's Jerry's Game.
Yeah.
It's real short, so it's not a ton of work, but you don't have to, like, fully draw every panel. You know, you're just doing, like, little stick figures or little, like, quick drawings, like little stamp-sized drawings. But you draw that and make note of color and where things are and, you know, the layout of each shot. And it is an education in itself. Like, it is – I learned more just doing that one short than I did any one class in my whole years of college. And that takes, like, a night to do.
Oh, wow. Well,
it will blow your mind at how cool that short is.
Oh, and yeah, the way that they weave a story, I mean, the only way to kind of get your mind around it would be to do something similar to that, you know, drawing it out to really understand it in a totally, you know, overall conceptual way.
Totally. And I'm not going to tell you any of the, like, amazing things I found in it, because I want your listeners to do it if they're interested. But you'll do it, and you'll find these magical things. Not like little, like, hidden, like, Pixar things, but the way things are laid out and the way it progresses and the amount of times they use certain things and the colors that they use. It's like, it's just secrets, like, top to bottom, and you'll just – it's amazing.
That's so cool, yeah. It's like you're thumbing through a secret document and finding the, you know, the hidden gems in there.
Yeah, it's like having the guy right there telling you, well, why did you, you know, make the chess pieces brown versus, like, yellow? Like, why'd you do that? And then he'll tell you, and you're like, oh, that makes so much sense. It's like one of those times when you talk to someone and they just say something that just blows your mind. And you never thought of it before, but you have to, like, run home and start drawing immediately. It's like one of those things.
That's so cool, man. Yeah, I'm really going to have to try that. Well, okay, the next thing I was going to ask you is, I totally forgot to ask you this earlier. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people, I would love to tell people to go watch your Burning Owl short, but
yeah,
what's the deal? I mean, are you guys ever going to release it online? What's the process for that? I mean, what do you guys, what's the future for the short?
So currently, I'm in talks with getting Titmouse to let me put the shorts online. Because it's been a long time, and we were thinking about maybe doing a DVD for a while, but nobody really wants to take the time to put it together and sell it online and do all that stuff. And that's not really the point, is to try to make money off of DVDs. It's really just to show our work. But for a while, since it was in Spike and Mike, we signed a contract. So it's been going around Spike and Mike, so we've been waiting for that to be over. But I think the contract just ran out. So don't expect it in the next week or the next maybe even month. But I think very, very soon I'm going to try to put it online.
Well, that's awesome news, man. If you guys get a chance, you know, keep on looking for it, because it is an awesome short, one of my favorites.
Cool, thanks.
Yeah, all right. So what's your plans of future projects, of your future aspirations? I mean, what's your goal? I mean, you're still really young. I mean, but you're also in an awesome place. Where would you want to go from here, career-wise?
You know, I don't try to plan stuff out too much. Like, a lot of people say, "Well, I want to be here this time. I want to be doing this. I want to be making this much money." I try not to do that. I try to, like, just, you know, I try to, like, really just follow what I like. And as long as I can feed myself and I'm making enough money to house myself so I don't get wet when it rains, like, I'm totally happy. I do, and I think I've been saying this ever since I finished The Owl, but I'm really into starting up another personal project outside of work. And also in work, like trying to, you know, once this Motor City is done, I'd really love to, like, you know, see what other kind of projects we could get going at Titmouse and just try to be a big part of, like, you know, onwards and upwards to try to, like, do more and cool things, you know, keep changing, keep doing different stuff. I get bored with stuff pretty quick. Like, after, like, 2 or 3 years of doing something, I'm finished. And I just want to, like, scrap it all and try something new, you know. So that's kind of my future plans, is to keep doing it and doing cool stuff, I guess.
I think that's a great attitude, absolutely. All right, well, my last question, and it's more of a segment that I like to do, although sometimes I do forget to ask people, is a segment that I call I'd Animate That. So, you know, something, nice. Yeah, like, I'd animate that. But what's something that you have always, or a character or a short or, you know, a creature, something that you've always wanted to animate, that, or something that you would love to animate more than anything else? Something you haven't already done, I guess, because you've done a lot.
Yeah, I actually have something off the top of my head right now. Like, I used to be able to say, like, oh, I just want to animate, like, some real cool action scenes or something. But right now what I'd really like to animate, and I haven't, it's one of those things that, you know, it's on my list of things to do in the future whenever I find a whole bunch of time, which is never. But I'd really like to animate someone, like, two characters, one character telling the other character a joke, but he does a horrible job at it. Like, there's some, like, I remember, like, and I don't mean to throw him under the bus, but one of my good friends, Josh Pruitt, who's also in the Those Guys that I went to college with, he's known for hearing a joke and coming to, like, a party or something, going, oh, guys, I heard this joke, like, I heard this stand-up comic, and he said this, and he slaughters it. It's not funny at all. It's horrible. And it is hilarious at how bad it is. And there's so much animation potential with not only the person watching a person saying a joke poorly, you know, like, there's a whole bunch of that, like, you know, oh, I have a joke, guys. And then the listener's like, okay, yeah, yeah, let's hear it. And then as he's like, oh, wait, no, that's not, oh, no, it was a clam, not a turtle. And then the guy's, like, slowly getting bored or something. And then, like, but then all the animation that it takes to show the thought process of getting lost in a joke and then finding your way again and then trying to, you know, it's so much, it's, I'd animate that.
Well, maybe we'll get lucky and get to see that online sometime in the future.
Oh, now you're working, oh, now you're like, oh, now I gotta do it.
Okay. Yeah. Everyone expect that from him. All right. Well, you know, I guess that's it, man. Well, before we wrap up, you know, I do, like, since, you know, a lot of people that listen to this are students and people that are getting into the industry, you know, and they're, I guess, gullible, naive, scared, you know, there's all kinds of different things, just because, you know, they're not sure.
Bright-eyed, ambitious.
Yeah, exactly. The good stuff, too, yes. What, you know, what's something that you learned, or what's the one thing that you look for in a job, or what's something, a good piece of advice that you can tell somebody getting into the industry?
I think for someone starting out, because I know when I was starting out, I wish someone would have told me this, like, just pretend like you're an animator already. Like, for so long, I put so much worth into officially becoming an animator. Just pretend you are, and then you are. Like, act as if you are an animator, you know? When, what I mean by that is sit down and animate something. It's, like, it's literally that simple. And if you pretend like you're an animator and you animate something, you magically become an animator. Like, it's like it's so much of the time, like, you, like, there's a lot of fear and, like, worry about, like, well, I'm not an animator yet, it's not official, like, I'm not a pro yet. It's like, when I went through school and until today, there was no day that my boss came to me and said, son, you're an animator today, you know? But, you know, you just start and you just animate and you just do stuff animators would do. Like, you watch movies and you enjoy it and you think about animation and you talk to other people who like to animate and talk about animation and, you know, imagine you're an animator and what an animator would do. Do that and you're an animator already, you know?
I read an interview that you did with somebody. I can't remember who it was. I think it was for your old school. And you mentioned something similar of, you know, well, don't be afraid. You know, start working on stuff when you're in school. You know, start taking freelance jobs. Treat yourself like you're an animator and you will be one.
Yeah. It's good advice.
Well, awesome, man. I mean, I had a great time interviewing you. I wish I could talk to you for another 2 hours, but...
Yeah, I don't have time. I'd love to just chat animation with you sometime.
Well, that would be great, man, and yeah, I'm sure everyone's going to really enjoy this interview, so thank you so much for doing it, man.
Yeah, no problem. I had a good time.
Yeah, and everybody, and I know I will definitely keep a very close eye on what you're doing in the future. Oh!
Yeah.
I'll probably splice this in. I wanted to ask you, I read that you did some work for Black Dynamite, the new cartoon.
Oh, yeah, I worked on the pilot. And we just started production on the actual show. I'm not working on the show, but I worked on the pilot. I think
they're about to release, right?
What's that?
They're about to release the pilot here soon, correct?
Yeah, I think they're going to release it on AdultSwim.com.
Oh, man, I can't wait for that. I remember watching the, you know, the end credits of the movie, and I was like, oh, man, if they do a show, that would be the best. And yeah, it looks like my dream came true.
The pilot is hilarious. You should definitely check it out.
Okay, I don't know how much you're allowed to talk about it, but they're fighting Muppets, right?
Not Muppets.
Or puppets, I'm sorry.
But might be puppets.
Okay, well, we'll watch it. Anyway, I don't want you to ruin it for me.
We're not officially able to call them Muppets.
Okay, right on. Well, yeah, we'll definitely check that out, too, and I'll see if I can try to pinpoint which shots you did.
Right on.
Well, all right, man. Thank you so much again. That was a blast talking to you and just hearing some awesome advice and cool stories. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of your work. And you have a website. What's your website name? What's the address for people to go to?
Oh, what is my website name?
Well, if you Google Mike Roush.
Yeah, Mike. Oh, it's really hard. It's MikeRoush.com.
And that's Roush.
Yep.
Any other websites you want people to check out? You got your Vimeo page. You got the Hidden Life of the Burning Owl website on Titmouse.
Well, if you go to MikeRoush.com, there's a contents page, and you can get to everything on the internet that has my stuff on it. So if you click on animation, it'll go to my Vimeo page. Or if you go to my blog, it will go to a place where I have a whole bunch of art up and stuff.
Oh, man, I love your sketches, man. The one with the alligator kind of, you know, hovering over the little creature and he's kind of cowering. Oh, that I love that drawing.
Thanks.
You have really great style, you know, very appealing. It's some really cool stuff, and I really hope to see some more of your drawings soon, too.
Yeah, always doing them.
All right, man. Well, thanks again so much, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you again later sometime.
Right on. Thanks.
All right, man. Thanks again.
Alright guys, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Mike. As you can tell, he is an awesome guy. And
super cool.
Yeah, go to his website, check out his sketches, his animations.
Check out the Cloaca video. It's pretty gross.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Absolutely, it kind of reminds me of Wonder Shows in a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, we got our first comment on the podcast. It is from a guy named Andrew Cotthill. And he's wrote a really nice comment, says, I just wanted to say, guys, fantastic podcast. This is about the last podcast, by the way. Refreshing, love the Dennis Boyer interview. Again, a refreshing view to put experience, friendship, and love the craft before inevitable business side of it. Thank you very much. So we want to say thank you to Andrew.
Yes, thank you for the feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really cool to hear from people. You know, you guys are more than welcome to email us or make a comment. But his website is andrewcotthill.blogspot.com. And you guys can follow him. He's going to be doing Jason Ryan's iAnimate, that course. So that's going to be really cool to see how he grows and, you know, you can see the progress he makes going through it. So check that out. See what he does. He's already got some really cool stuff that I'm really interested in seeing. He's got a short about a guy who's stranded on a desert island that looks pretty good called Grounded. So take a look at Andrew's site. Oh, one thing I wanted to bring up too is we did it, man. Talking about on episode one.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. Getty Tartakovsky, right, is his name? Tartakovsky? I
don't remember. Something that's a little closer.
He was the guy that made Samurai Jack, the Clone
Dexter's
Wars,
Lab, Clone Wars.
Yeah, Clone Wars 2D.
Symbiotic Titan.
Yes, super cool guy. We were talking about him on the first podcast.
Pretty much helped one of the big guys who helped turn Cartoon Network into their own.
Yeah, and his show got canceled from Cartoon Network, and we were talking about how he needs to direct a movie, even a 3D movie.
Yes.
And he is.
Yeah.
Which is going to be a monster-type movie with Adam Sandler. So
we'll see how that goes. Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
It might be awesome, which I think it will, because he's behind the wheel on that. So way to go, Robert. We did it. We got him a job. We got him a directing gig.
It was totally us.
Absolutely. So, and I think that shows how far the podcast has come, too.
In the first episode.
What you can do if you put your mind to something.
Yeah.
So, you're welcome, Gabe.
Next, I'm going to start... picking my lottery numbers on there.
There you go. I'm sure that'll be really interesting for everyone to listen to.
Yeah. All right.
Well, all right, guys. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. The next one is going to be with Michael Kaywood from Devil's Angels and Dating.
Yes.
We have some other really cool interviews lined up. We got a guy from Moonbot. One of the senior animators that worked on their really cool iPad app, the animated iPad app. So keep listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
Bye.